I am not writing this to kick you while you're down. I am writing this because I believe that nobody is beyond redemption. I am writing this in the hopes that some of you, dear crypto bros, will only have to touch the shitcoin stove once. I am writing this in the hopes that some of you, dear fiat bros, will finally understand that Bitcoin is not only different from all of, quote, crypto, but that it is different from all other currencies, your beloved government-issued shitcoins included. My message to you is the same. There is Bitcoin, and there is everything else. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know, and we have got a fantastic read today. Also, I am very sorry about not having anything out for last Friday. The end of the week last week was kind of crazy, and it messed up a lot of things that I thought I was going to be ahead on, and et cetera. I'm not going to bore you with it. It was a mess. I apologize, but as always, you can expect Monday, Wednesday, and Friday episodes of Bitcoin Audible covering anything and everything you want to hear about in the space, which, by the way, let me know. Let me know what things you want me to dig into on the show. I still get questions, obviously, a lot, and it's super useful in me sorting through all of the things that I want to talk about to find what's useful for you guys. This show obviously is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin and CoinKite, makers of the Cold Card hardware wallet. If you want to buy Bitcoin automatically and plug your life into a Bitcoin standard, Swan Bitcoin is the place to go. And if you want to keep that shit safe, you want to withdraw it and hold your keys, obviously you get yourself a Cold Card and use code Bitcoin Audible right there in the show notes. Links also provided. We have a wonderful show today, a wonderful read today, which is actually a blast from the past. And I love this one because this was written in the very heart of the bear market. The price was $16,600-ish when this piece was written. And it is by none other than Durjiji. And I thought I had covered it on the show. I had not. I had read this. Don't know. And maybe I did, and I just can't sort through my episodes very well. If I did, I'm sorry. Well, you get a reboot. Because I think it's beautiful. I think it's great. A great reference for going back, because he talks about in this piece when we will be back to where we are right now. And I think the perspective and the conviction, like understanding of where we were in not only just the cycle, but why there was this inevitable move, why we have these deleveraging events, and what it is that fundamentally Bitcoin provides that these other things do not, both in the context of crypto and fiat, and why it is so hard to alter your mental frame sometimes to genuinely see what it is that Bitcoin, what Bitcoin is. So without further ado, let's get into the read, and then we will jump into some commentary, a guy's take to follow. And it's titled, Dear Crypto and Fiat Bros, An Open Letter to the Confused and Dismissive. By Durjiji. It should be obvious by now, but I'm afraid I'll have to spell it out anyway. Bitcoin, not blockchain. Bitcoin, not crypto. Bitcoin, not distributed ledger technology. Bitcoin, not DeFi. Bitcoin, not Web3. Bitcoin, not CBDCs. Bitcoin, not yield farming. Bitcoin, not centralized neobanks that sell you fractional reserve paper Bitcoin. Bitcoin. If you think that Bitcoin is dead, you've been fooled by fiat journalists. If you think that Bitcoin is slow or old tech or MySpace or the Model T, you've been fooled by snake oil salesmen. In the former case, you're probably feeling smug.
I knew it was all a Ponzi scheme. Good thing I didn't invest in Bitcoin. I told y'all that it would go to zero.
In the latter case, you're probably still in shock because the likelihood is high that you just lost all your money. Maybe you are still in denial. Maybe you are angry or even depressed. Maybe your pre-mined world computer coins are locked up in a centrally controlled staking system and you have no way of getting them out again. Unfortunately, there is no way to fast-track the 5 stages of grief. You have to slouch through it all until you finally arrive at acceptance. I never had Bitcoin in the first place. I only had IOUs and paper Bitcoin. I was the yield that was being farmed. Admitting that you've been fooled is one of the hardest things there is. It takes humility, strength, self-reflection, and the swallowing of pride to acknowledge that you've been had. It's easier to blame someone else and double down, or to throw your hands in the air and walk away. It's a harsh truth, and at some point in the future, you will be able to hear it. You have been fooled, and you have no one to blame but yourself. If that's too painful right now, fine. Step back. Do something else for a while. Spend some time with your family, or in the woods, or go fishing or something. And once you come back, try to wrap your head around the following. Bitcoin is the signal, and the rest is noise. All of it. I am not writing this to kick you while you're down. I am writing this because I believe that nobody is beyond redemption. I am writing this in the hopes that some of you, dear crypto bros, will only have to touch the shitcoin stove once. I am writing this in the hopes that some of you, dear fiat bros, will finally understand that Bitcoin is not only different from all of quote crypto, but that it is different from all other currencies, your beloved government-issued shitcoins included. My message to you is the same. There is Bitcoin, and there is everything else. You have to understand that Bitcoin is not an app or a company or a stock or an investment. Bitcoin doesn't have a board of directors or a CEO or quarterly earnings. There is nobody, quote, behind Bitcoin. Many Bitcoiners have strong opinions when it comes to Bitcoin versus, quote, crypto, and for good reason. One is a breakthrough of enormous proportions. The others are cheap imitations, copycats that have been riding the coattails of said breakthrough for way too long, confusing noobs and retail investors alike. Quote, crypto is nerds rediscovering money printing and pyramid schemes, seemingly free lunches propped up by perpetual motion machines that run on technobabble. Crypto does not compare to Bitcoin. If you want to compare Bitcoin to something else, compare it to fire, the number zero, the wheel, the printing press, or electricity. Yes, it is that important. It is an autopoietic network that is internally stable and can't go bankrupt. The antidote to the corruption of money. It is an entirely new thing. Something that is so profound, so alien, so novel, that most people fail to appreciate it. I don't blame them. Most people know nothing about cryptography, or networks, or money, or open protocols. Consequently, most people are easily fooled. What is so revolutionary about Bitcoin? Bitcoin is absolutely scarce. Bitcoin's issuance is fixed in time. Bitcoin can be stored in your head. Bitcoin can be sent at the speed of light. Bitcoin can be verified by anyone easily and cheaply. Every single one of these points is revolutionary in itself. We never had a liquid asset that is absolutely scarce. We never had a man-made currency that didn't have an issuer. We never had a marketable good that was just words, something that still blows my mind to this day. Learn 12 words by heart and you can flee your country with your wealth intact. We never had high-velocity money without having to rely on credit. Allow me to repeat the last point for emphasis. For the first time in human history, we have a money that is pure information. Something that stores value in bits and bytes directly, without having to rely on a trusted third party. And because it is pure information, it can be sent to anyone at the speed of light. Unfortunately, this killer feature of Bitcoin is lost on most people. Bitcoin is not credit. It's not an IOU. not a promise, not reliant on any counterparty, not a liability. Like gold before it, it is not backed by anything. It is the desirable thing itself. It is money. Pure, undebasable money. Whether you're a wrecked crypto bro or a friend of fiat, there is one thing that is especially difficult to accept. The one thing that sets Bitcoin apart. It all works without anyone in charge. Bitcoin is best understood as a force of nature, like the coming and going of the tide, like the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. You can have an opinion on it, but your opinion doesn't have any influence on the phenomenon whatsoever. The tide will come and go. The sun will rise and set, and Bitcoin will produce a new block every 10 minutes. Amidst attention-grabbing headlines this week that will be talked about for decades, I want to bring to your attention one far more profound and awe-inspiring non-headline. Every 10 minutes, a new Bitcoin block was produced. Every 10 minutes. Every 10 minutes. Ross Stevens. Bitcoin just works. Like clockwork. It works because you don't have to trust anyone. It works because it uses mathematics and physics, the laws of nature, to remove any trust from the system. It works because you can verify anything yourself. It works because it is not an external thing dictated by someone else, but an emergent thing brought into existence by relentless validation and verification. It works because you and only you are in charge. If you aren't in charge, you are not using Bitcoin. You are trusting someone else with their interpretation of Bitcoin, or even worse, you are trusting someone else to hold Bitcoin for you. Quote, "The root problem with conventional currency is all the trust that's required to make it work. The central bank must be trusted not to debase the currency, but the history of fiat currencies is full of breaches of that trust. Banks must be trusted to hold our money and transfer it electronically, but they lend it out in waves of credit bubbles with barely a fraction in reserve. We have to trust them with our privacy, trust them not to let identity thieves drain our accounts." Satoshi Nakamoto. Bitcoin was created as a response to the rug pulls of the fiat world. It is anti-rug pull technology. But it is only anti-rug pull technology if you use it right. Your node, your rules, your keys, your Bitcoin. Crypto, on the other hand, is fiat on steroids. Worse, it is fiat on methamphetamines. It is the belief that honest money doesn't matter, which is why every project, every person, every exchange, every network, every system, every community, and every JPEG needs its own separate form of money. It's economic nihilism. The two couldn't be more different. Bitcoin removes seigniorage. Shitcoins reintroduce seigniorage. Bitcoin removes the Cantillon effect. Shitcoins reintroduce the Cantillon effect. Bitcoin removes trust. Shitcoins reintroduce trust, as do centralized and financial services motivated by fiat thinking. But isn't Bitcoin dead? No, it's not dead. It's also not a fad, or suddenly useless, or suddenly worthless. What happened is what always happens. People get complacent, people get greedy, and people fool themselves and others. By layering trust on top of Bitcoin, you reintroduce central points of failure and systemic risk. For any systems built on top of these central institutions, that is. This has happened before, and it will happen again. Time is a flat circle. Again, a centralized company failed. Again, it is unclear how much of this failure was due to incompetence, how much due to malice, and how much due to fraud. Again, the Bitcoin network was unaffected. Again, people relied on trust. Again, the rug was pulled. It should be obvious by now that Bitcoin held by someone else is not your Bitcoin. It should be obvious that paper Bitcoin is not Bitcoin. Further, it should be obvious that Bitcoin and leverage mix as well as oil and water. All of this has happened before, and human nature being what it is, all of this will happen again. people will again fail to heed the warnings of the more experienced Bitcoiners. People will again fail to hold their own keys. People will again fall victim to the siren songs of more gains, more yield, fast riches, and easy money. Quote, "A fool and their leveraged Bitcoin are soon parted." Caitlin Long. And when the fools once again lose all their money, and when you, dear crypto bros, get rug pulled by your dear leader, and when you, dear fiat bros, declare Bitcoin dead once more, and when the 500th Bitcoin obituary has been written, Bitcoin will still march on, unhindered. But what about the price? Didn't it crash? Yes, it did crash, and it will crash again and again and again, like it has in the past.
This one time, Bitcoin went from 6 cents all the way to 36 cents, and then it crashed down to 21 cents. And then another time, Bitcoin went from 85 cents all the way to $29, and then it crashed to $3. And then another time, Bitcoin went all the way to $213, and then it crashed all the way to $70. And then another time, Bitcoin went all the way to $1,100, and then it crashed all the way to $239. So the moral of the story is, don't buy Bitcoin, because you know it's going to crash again.
As of this writing, the Bitcoin price is $16,641. Yes, it went all the way up to $65,000, and then it crashed all the way down to $16,000. Here is what you have to understand. US dollar price is both important and unimportant. Here is how price is important. Bitcoin needs to have a price so the Bitcoin system can secure itself. Price is correlated to hash rate, which is again correlated with security, or more accurately, settlement assurance. It is also a good indicator of global adoption. And yes, we usually use US dollars to measure the Bitcoin price because, as of this writing, the US dollar is still the unit of account of this world, sadly. To see how price is unimportant, let's ask some questions and answer them one by one. Did the Bitcoin supply change? No. Did the network stop? No. Can you still send sats to anyone without having to ask for permission? Yes. Do holders still hold the same amount of Bitcoin? Yes. Can you still easily and cheaply verify all of the above? Yes. From the point of view of the Bitcoin network, nothing changed. In other words, the rules of the network did not change. Supply is still limited. Every 10 minutes, new transactions are settled. The monetary policy did not change. The properties of the asset did not change. 1 BTC still equals 1 BTC. Bitcoin worked just as well as it does now when the US dollar price was zero, which was the case for the first 10 months of its existence. Without a central issuer, Bitcoin had and still has to grow organically in value, distribution, and security, which is why many people, myself included, believe that Bitcoin's history cannot be repeated, i.e., that a scarce digital commodity is path-dependent. Speaking of price, it helps to put things in a broader context when talking about any price in the first place. Nominal price is an expression of relationship, and thus any price depends on the unit you use to measure said price, the economic lens that you use to see through and see the world with. It is worth noting, for example, that the US dollar M2 money supply has expanded massively in the last couple of decades. The most recent expansion of over 30% was in large part due to the monetary response to the worldwide lockdowns. In other words, when measuring the value of things in USD, everything is distorted by at least 30%. When it comes to economic views, we see with and through the respective currency we are forced to do economic calculations with. Whether our default lens is the US dollar, the euro, or the yen depends mostly on circumstance and geography. Granted, BTC is not universally useful as a lens yet, but it is useful as a comparison to fiat lenses. It is useful because it provides a counterbalance to the inflationary monetary policies of fiat currencies. It is useful because, from a BTC point of view, it shows that everything is being repriced in sats, even the stupid shit you bought a couple of years ago. Consequently, Bitcoiners like to speak of purchasing power, because it is irrespective to the nominal value bound to fiat currency measure. Note, for example, that the Bitcoin chart looks very different depending on what you use as measurement, whether it's USD, the United States dollar, ARS, the Argentine peso, NGN, the Nigerian naira, the Venezuelan bolivar, or, to pick something else entirely, the S&P 500, gold, or barrels of oil. In the Western world, we are especially oblivious to the fiat lens through which we view the world. We are mostly dealing with, quote, stable currencies, i.e., currencies that are slowly declining in purchasing power. But make no mistake, all fiat currencies are inflating. If money can be printed, it will be printed. The temptation is simply too strong. Consequently, all fiat monies are monies of decline, and if this decline happens too quickly, link to when money dies, the distortion in prices becomes obvious. And if the distortion gets big enough, all long-term economic calculation, and with it, regular life, breaks down. The above chart, the purchasing power of the US dollar from 1913 to 2019, shows two things very clearly. Fiat currencies are designed to lose purchasing power over time. Bitcoin is designed to monetize naturally over time, and all things being equal, it will continue to monetize. It will continue to monetize because Bitcoin is valuable. It is your money. Nobody can interfere with it. Nobody can debase it. Nobody can take it from you, when stored properly, that is. Nobody can stop you from using it. In a world of deplatforming, debanking, and CBDCs, having censorship-resistant, unconfiscatable money is valuable in itself. If you disagree with the above, I invite you to check your financial privilege, link included. Currently, Bitcoin is ranked number 28 worldwide, both as an asset and when compared to fiat currencies. A caveat updated for today at the time of this recording, it's number 5 now, and it just passed the British pound. It is number 28 now because it crashed, and it crashed because people are greedy, over-leveraged, and there are no bailouts. It seems, however, that despite all of this, Bitcoin is continually monetizing. Due to Bitcoin's fixed issuance schedule, its predetermined issuance over time, the only thing that can meaningfully respond to adoption waves is price. How else could an asset monetize naturally? An asset that doesn't have an issuer, but chaotically. Or, to quote Alan Farrington, what would it seem like if it did seem like a global, digital, sound, open-source, programmable money was monetizing from absolute zero? But Bitcoin doesn't produce anything. Wrong. Every 10 minutes, a new valid block is produced. That's all that matters. And with this block, another chapter of unforgeable history is being written. And the core promise of Bitcoin is kept. I will not steal from you, neither through debasement nor confiscation. If you think that Bitcoin should produce anything else, like yield, for example, you are still looking at the world through a fiat lens, bound to the view that you have to put your money to work. You did not pause and reconsider the yield from money held, link provided. I empathize with you. I was looking at the world through the same fiat lens not too long ago. I was even bullish on, quote, crypto, believing that an unstoppable world computer would be a neat thing. It took me a very long time to understand that printing money does not enrich society, but does just the opposite.
replies to people like Krugman, that we don't get involved in technical details, but ask them questions almost like a child. Explain to me how an increase in paper pieces can possibly make a society richer. If that were the case, explain to me, why is there still poverty in the world? Isn't every central bank in the world capable of printing as much paper as they want? And do you then think the society, the world as a whole, would be richer? I'm sure the guy cannot answer this type of question. Nobody can answer this type of question. But again, we get far too much bogged down in answering technical details of his argument instead of always repeating this question. Please explain to me how a piece of paper can make society richer.
In the same way, it took me a very long time to step back and ask myself the following questions, almost like a child. Why does your hypothetical world computer need its own currency? Why does your company need its own currency? Why does your centralized exchange need its own currency? Why do you need to print your own money for your endeavor to be successful? I used to be a crypto bro myself, and it was the difficulty I had when trying to answer these questions truthfully that turned me away from crypto and towards Bitcoin. And when I was a fiat bro, I didn't even know these questions were worth asking in the first place. The most difficult thing is to get rid of the fiat mindset, which is to say, to step back and ask yourself very simple questions about money. Why do we have it? Why do we need it? Why does it have to be scarce? Why can some people print it while most people have to work for it? And so on. These are hard questions. Those who run the money printers don't want you to ask, WTF happened in 1971. Those who run the shitcoin casinos don't want you to ask, but where does the yield come from? But even with all the shenanigans that are currently going on, I'm hopeful. After all, you can fool some people sometimes, but you can't fool all the people all the time. More and more people will learn. More and more people will hold their own keys. More and more people will run the numbers. This assumption is not based on faith. Bitcoin's on-chain data shows certain patterns, which I would summarize as understanding increases conviction, conviction increases allocation, or the more you know, the more you buy. These, quote, HODL waves, as they are called, show that an increasing number of people understand the underlying dynamics of, as well as the differences between, fiat monetary policy and Bitcoin's monetary policy, which leads to them holding BTC on their personal or corporate balance sheets rather than fiat currency. But the volatility! Volatility, volatility, volatility. All this talk about volatility misses the whole point of Bitcoin: deep, systemic stability. Bitcoin isn't volatile. Human psychology is. Human behavior is volatile. Bitcoin isn't. Consequently, Bitcoin's market price can be volatile, but Bitcoin is not. The Bitcoin network has been operating continually for well over a decade. It is predictable, steady, and reliable. From that perspective, Bitcoin is the most stable thing there is. Every 10 minutes, a new block is found. Every 10 minutes, the whole system increases in reliability and stability, independent of price swings. As long as new blocks are coming in, there is nothing to worry about. Once again, the lens you use to look at Bitcoin matters a great deal. Step back. Zoom out. Look at blocks, not price. Time, not yield. Base money, not credit. But yes, while Bitcoin is monetizing, swings in purchasing power are to be expected. The sensible response is to adjust your allocation according to your risk appetite. A 0% allocation is not a sensible position, because a 0% allocation is a 100% allocation to assets that have substantial counterparty risk, or even worse, assets that aren't assets in the first place, but liabilities. But I missed the bus. No, you didn't. We are still very early in the unfolding of the Bitcoinization process. Everyone thinks they are late. Everyone thinks that they have missed the bus. Post on Bitcoin Talk forums, July 25th, 2010. I have only 600 Bitcoins, virtually all generated last week. I missed the bus. Frowny face. I'll be buying some soon. Happy face. Most Bitcoiners don't think of Bitcoin as an investment. It is a breakthrough technology that allows you to move wealth through space and time. It is not about getting rich in fiat terms. It is an exit, not a detour. It is about measuring your wealth in sats, not US dollars or euros or any other random shitcoin. Your wealth held and controlled by you. Because of this, it is never too late to use it to your advantage. Just like it's never too late to adopt electricity or the internet, it is never too late to adopt the Bitcoin standard. But Bitcoiners are mean.
When you're first coming in and other people are telling you that the maximalists are, they're closed-minded, bro, and they don't understand and they're stupid and this and that. Bitcoin maximalists are people with experience. You know, the pleb movement was a bunch of people who got dumped on by the ICO promoters and all the bad actors from 2017. And they realized that the only thing that's real here is Bitcoin, and that Bitcoin is the risk-free rate, and that by just doing very simple things, listen, hodling Bitcoin is very simple, but it's not easy. It's fucking difficult. Every single day you have to wake up and you have to make the decision to hodl. You're going to have to learn some self-discipline, some self-responsibility, some self-control. I mean, caveat emptor, like buyer beware. Like one of the things I've been saying is that if you go out and tell lies in mainstream traditional advertising, the FCC is looking out for you. Burger King can't come out with a Whopper and be like, this Whopper cures cancer. But a shitcoin can come out with anything they want and say that it does anything they want. And because you're used to living in a nerfed world where there are guardians who protect you from evil manipulators and liars, right? You're used to things that are being told to you in mainstream media being true or more or less true. And so you just go, oh yeah, well, if Burger King says it cures cancer, then it must cure cancer. I guess I'll eat a bunch of Whoppers, right? That's what you're doing. That's literally what you're doing when you're believing a shitcoin sales pitch. There's no one gonna step in and save you. You gotta step in and save you. You gotta love yourself. You gotta love yourself. Buying shitcoins is nihilism. You're just going like, my life is shit. Everything around me is shit. I have no hope for the future. I'm gonna put 10,000 bucks in this thing and maybe it's gonna 1,000x in the next 2 months. I don't care if it's an absolute piece of shit. I don't care if it does nothing for the world. I don't care if it's vaporware. I'm either gonna sleep in a tent or I'm gonna fucking buy a Lamborghini. That's nihilism. That's fatalistic. Bitcoin is rational optimism. You're putting aside something for future you. You're saying, I have a future. I love myself. Things are gonna be better for me. I'm gonna have a fucking family. I'm gonna claw my way out of this fucking morass I find myself in. That's a revolutionary action to like actually love yourself and to actually do the right thing for yourself and put aside money for your fucking future. So hodling starts with self-love. Shitcoiners are into Bitcoin too, man. They're just into your Bitcoin. They want your fucking Bitcoin.
Do the right thing. Drop your shitcoin bags, whether they are crypto or fiat denominated. Start small. Take responsibility. Learn how to self-custody. Produce value, spend less than you make, and start saving in Bitcoin. Start counting your wealth in sats. Or don't. You can also stay in crypto wonderland, buying ape JPEGs and shares of Ponzi's built on quicksand. You can once again believe all the lies of the next autistic wunderkind, convincing you that fundamentals don't matter and that principles are worthless. You can also stay in the world of fiat slavery, believing that your money should steal from you as long as the rate of stealing stays somewhere between 2 to 9%, that printing trillions out of thin air is sensible monetary policy, and that central bank digital currencies are a neat idea. In either case, Bitcoin doesn't care. But when, not if, the next centralized abomination implodes, and when, not if, Bitcoin reaches new heights again, and when the mainstream media screams bubble again, and when Bitcoin's price will once more correct after that, and when fools are once again parted with the coins that they thought they held, remember this: you could have known better. You could have held your own keys. You could have run your own node. You could have stayed humble. You could have stacked sats. You could have listened to the toxic maximalists. You could have read a book or two. You could have stayed away from the shitcoins and the Ponzi's and the central points of failure. But you didn't, and you have no one to blame but yourself. Good luck. This episode is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin, one of the best places to get started to just get yourself on a Bitcoin standard. If you're trying to buy regularly, you just want to smash buy, you just want to start buying Bitcoin and start denominating your life in sats. Takes almost no time at all. You can just open up the after you sign in and get your account, you can just break out the app and you can buy whenever you want. They're fully Bitcoin only. They're not going to try to sell you on any crypto. They're not going to try to tell you when to play the market. They don't want you to trade. Swan is literally a service that is built around teaching you how to have a Bitcoin standard and how to securely and even automatically get you secured with one. You will find all of the resources you need to hold your own keys, to get your business on Bitcoin. They even have employee benefit packages that you can do through Swan. They have a vault service if you want help in ensuring that your keys are safe and that you have a backup plan without giving up custody of your coins. You can set up an IRA in just a few minutes and start allocating tax-free for your retirement. And if you are high net worth and you want the full, like, I can call them at any time and get questions answered sort of white glove service, they have Swan Private. It is the full financial suite of Bitcoin services to get you on a Bitcoin standard. I've literally been using them for years since they started, and they have been wonderful. I highly recommend it. Not only if you've been in Bitcoin for a long time, but if you are new, it is a wonderful place to start to avoid the noise and risk that usually comes with getting into this space. Check them out. Go to swanbitcoin.com/guy. The link is right in the show notes. All right. So I love this piece. It's funny, Gigi actually linked this to me, and I thought I'd read this one. I don't know. I don't know if it's just that I read so many in trying to find what I want to do on the show, and then I plan for, you know, these 10 articles in a list, and then I get to 7 of them, and then it gets to get distracted with other ones, and I add another 10 to the list. So there's just always those articles, even ones that I really liked, that slip through the cracks. But I think the reason that I wanted to do this episode now, or after he linked it to me, which he wasn't, like, Gigi didn't hit me up. It's like, why don't you do this one on the show? Like, it was just in a random thread on Noster. But the reason is because I think it's incredibly relevant to today. And it's also, this was written in the heart. I mean, obviously, as you can listen in the article, this was written in the heart of the bear market. This is when the Bitcoin price was literally at its very bottom. So like I said before the show, I think the important context here is to understand and recognize the conviction of grasping what the true value of this thing is, to write this in the bloodiest of the blood of the market. And if you, obviously, if you go back to my show, you go back to anyone and you talk to anyone, or you see what the podcasts were saying or anything during that market, the people who truly understood what this was, not only was it obvious that we were going to have a deep bear market, not only was it obvious that it was insanely healthy for us to have that and necessary to do so, because there was just a staggering amount of leverage that had to get cleaned out, but nobody was unsure of what Bitcoin meant. And I know myself in particular, like I have, some of us have been here for a long time, and, you know, I've been through this 4 times now, as far as these, like, psychotic bull bear longer cycles. So, like, I kind of have that benefit of, I don't know whether you want to call it hindsight, in the sense that I remember what it feels like to actually think Bitcoin was going to die and believe that it's like, it was like a profound thing, but like, oh my God, is this going to recover? Like, even with the conviction that I had back in 2012, 13, 14 era, where like things were really, really bloody, you know, you don't have a lot of external sources to back up that conviction. You kind of feel like you're totally and completely alone in understanding why this thing is valuable. So you do that 3 times and it just gets progressively easier each time. But I just think it's interesting to dig into this piece today because we are back where he says we are going to be. And the frame of reference of when we are here, where we are today, are you going to remember this perspective? Are you going to remember that this is what you were told? And, you know, I was having a conversation in DM with the recent drama and shit throwing on Twitter is about this finance guy Guy Talks Finance, I think is his handle. And he's got some just kind of like generic bad takes on Bitcoin that are kind of like 2017 era. But I mean, granted, you know, anybody who's been outside of it and or I also think that like people in finance in general, I think have a, and this is something we talked about with the thread from Samantha Leduc on, I think it was Guys Take 79 of Bitcoin is Not Money, because she's in finance as well. And I talked about it. I talked about this odd, what seems like a conflict, but I think is actually seems more natural when you think about what the difference is. And it's the fact that finance and money are conflated and they are not and actually have very, very little to do with each other. And I think part of that framing or part of the reason why finance people who finance bros tend to think they have the requisite knowledge to judge Bitcoin is because they think of Bitcoin as one of the commodities or equities. They think of it as an investment vehicle. And so they compare it to Amazon. They compare it to real estate and investing in housing. They compare it to, you know, flows of capital and whether or not it's productive and, you know, what's the underlying thing and what is it going to be used for? And they don't think about it in the context of money, and they don't understand monetary history, and that money is not only a specific good with its own market and its own characteristics, but that it's actually profoundly unique, and you're not going to be able to project P/E ratios onto this thing to make sense of it. And even more so is that it's a profoundly misunderstood market because it is so big and it moves so incredibly slowly. Money is the thing that enables the calculation that makes finance even possible to begin with. And most people don't realize that the ground is shifting under them and that finance is, those calculations are actually more difficult. Those calculations are actually inaccurate. And the results and the decisions that are made, the incentives that are reinforced in a fiat system, in a system that is actually directly manipulated at the base layer, that the results and the conclusions of that are actually more indicative of what is happening at the base layer itself, what is happening at the monetary layer. But here's the thing, the results are so far removed conceptually in the second, third, and fourth order sort of effects, and money is such a ubiquitous thing that you can't really have a control in the experiment. It's not like when you go to the store and you're, you know, selecting between product A and product B, because one of the critical value metrics, one of the critical metrics by which you judge product A and product B is its price. The understanding and assessment of the value of a money, specifically a money only actually comes to fruition or actually shows in practice, it actually demonstrates in the real world what it is able to do by being adopted, because it is a network good, but it's within a single society. So you can't really have like this control group that really says, well, look at the society created by fiat, and then let's have a little society created by Bitcoin. Like, they are intertwined. It's a communication medium among the same group. It's a network within and intertwined with another network. So essentially, you have to deduce the results from the characteristics of the money and the understanding of what monetary value and monetary networks do. Finance simply isn't anything like that. Finance has nothing to do with it. Finance is dependent on that as a medium, as a totem, to even begin to make all of the financial frameworks and the mental models to compare one thing to another. To understand money at the base layer is to understand the difference in the economic mental models for making sense of what value is to begin with. It is literally an alternative way to think about that, rather than an alternative way to apply the mental model to some good or commodity within the market. We're talking about establishing a different market with different incentives and different fundamental rules. So it makes perfect sense that almost no one knows what the hell that even is, or even has like a strong framework to begin to make that mental assessment. And I think it's even worse for people in finance and traditional finance in general, and kind of the fiat banking world, because they think it's what they actually work in. They think that their practice, their specialization, is in understanding whether or not Bitcoin is valuable, because they know whether or not oil is valuable, or whether or not to invest in real estate right now, or bonds, or whatever it is. And I think that is already one mental model removed from the way to actually understand Bitcoin. Because it lends you more likely to look at Bitcoin as a network. Like the finance guy, Guy Talks Finance, is a great example, because he keeps asking, his framing is in the conclusion of a good money, not the beginning of a good money. He asks, well, I can't use it at a shop. Why isn't it being adopted as a money all over the place? Because he's thinking about it like an app. Like, are you adopting Square for payments, or are you adopting Cash App or HoneyBook or whatever? And this is actually what happens in late stages of monetization. So when we're getting to the question of, you know, whether or not, you know, all these different services and businesses and products or whatever now accepting Bitcoin and then keeping Bitcoin on their balance sheet, when we're asking that question and we're seeing that part of the network expansion basically take hold, the game's already over. That's essentially when the monetization has already won. That is a late stage monetization result. And as I say many, many times on this show and have explained in all of the different economics and papers and articles, everything that we have covered when it comes to kind of economic history and Austrian theory, is the one very extremely clear thing is that monetary networks are the largest, lowest level, and slowest moving networks. Monetization and demonetization, broad monetary networks and broad monetary goods, is literally measured in centuries. I think the only exception with Bitcoin, the reason Bitcoin is the exception, is because just like we see with every technology, it accelerates and progresses faster and faster, and change is able to happen faster and faster. And I think Bitcoin is going to be looking at a 30-year sort of lifespan for becoming essentially the predominant money of the world. But if you think about it in the context of like what we are used to, when you think about it, if you're thinking about it like a normal network, if you're thinking about it like Facebook or an application or some new tech or payment system, well, then you're going to see, oh, 5 years passed and it seems like nothing has changed fundamentally. 10 years have passed and I still can't use it at Walmart. And you're not going to see the real underlying changes that are happening and why this is, well, this is actually like clearly monetizing, and all of the courses, all of the logically following different stages of this thing are playing out very, very clearly. And if I had to put the case for Bitcoin, as simple as it can be stated, should money be fair, where the rules apply to everyone, or should money have a master key where some people can create as many units as they want or edit them as they see fit? At the end of the day, that is really the question. Now, TradFi people, finance people, Keynesian economists may literally say that the opposite, that the latter of those options is the better one. That we need money to be controlled. We need money to be able to be edited, because the market and the people in the individual situations with their individual judgments and, you know, understanding what the value of that money is in relation to what it costs them are always going to just make horrible mistakes. And so it makes sense to essentially remove their economic weight from the economy and replace it with trillions of dollars and, you know, very meticulously thought out and heavily and carefully weighed subsidies and corporate loans and special interest projects, because these decisions by the political class, by the people in Congress and the lobbyists and their aides and legal assistants, these are far closer to the boots on the ground reality of the economy and what things are worth than the people engaging in those trade-offs themselves for their own lives and to achieve their own values and what they hope. Granted, I think traditional finance people and Keynesian economists don't recognize that that's what they're saying, which again I think lends itself to the argument that their base model for what money is and why it actually does the job that it does, that their mental model is just entirely different. And that is the challenge. That is what is being opposed. And we've never had the opportunity to see these things play out in the real world next to each other. And most people look at the world today and they don't say, what society has our money created and what characteristics of our money have created the sorts of incentives, behaviors, and culture that our society sees. They say, this is what people are, this is what culture is, and this is the society that humans produce, and therefore only a money that can be cheated, that can fix these things by being manipulated, could ever actually work. And I think part of that mental frame is that they don't see society or the economy as a system that is organized by money, by the incentives and communication of value at the monetary layer. They see society and the economy as something that is a product of people's opinions or just the nature of people in general, and they forget that all of this stuff is intersubjective, which means that all of our behaviors, all of our cultures, all of our decisions, all of our value judgments change based on what we perceive the next person's value judgment, behaviors, incentives, and decisions is. So when you understand that one person's decisions are altered and that the incentives are fundamentally manipulated, and how easily something can just go, something with just a very small positive feedback can just be pushed over the line to a very small negative feedback, and that, 100,000 steps down the line produces perfectly like polar opposite results, and that this actually alters, it actually has an effect on what people are, on the culture, on what we believe, on decisions that we make, on our hope for the future, our literal frame of reference for what is worth doing and engaging in and what we should strive for. The monetary system, the society, and the economy are a network, and the fundamental protocol of that network is the money. It is the rules of the monetary good by which we use. And two different monies with two different rules will literally produce different societies. And it won't be that the same people will just ruin it in both contexts, because in one, a certain type of behavior and a certain type of person is rewarded and another is punished, while in the other, it may literally be the opposite. Therefore, that negative feedback for some sort of sustainable or intelligent or long-term behavior now suddenly becomes a positive feedback. And it only has to be a little bit. It only has to be a little bit. And when you compound it over time, you get results that are so different that it seems impossible that it could have just been that simple. So anyway, I'm a bit out of time and I just wanted to hit that. And I thought this was a really cool article. And as always, I'm a huge, huge fan of Gigi and his writing and everything, as you guys know. So check it out. I will have the link in the show notes to a number of things that were referenced in here. In fact, he referenced like three other works. Check Your Financial Privilege, a piece by Alan Farrington. I'm not even sure which one it was. I think it was Wittgenstein's Money, probably, because that was with a quote. And then something else. I can't remember. I will try to dig through the article again and find those so that I can have those in the show notes for you guys. So if you want to, and specifically because I did all of them in audio, so these almost everything that I think he links in this piece has an audio version on Bitcoin Audible. Can you tell I've been doing this for too long? I have a problem. So check those out if you haven't, and obviously I'll link to Gigi's blog and everything there. Thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to share this out. Seriously, this show, everything that I do, entirely grows on word of mouth and what you guys have done, and it is amazing to see where we have come after all this time. And this is prime time for trying to explain this to people calmly and honestly, because it's going to be messy, it's going to be noisy, we are clearly going back into another psychotic bull market, which is going to be tons and tons of fun, but it's also just going to be tons and tons of shit, really. Like, I love it when Bitcoin gets more valuable, but damn it, bear markets are so much easier to deal with, and it's also just nice to be able to just stack a lot of Bitcoin, and it's just going to get harder and noisier and messier. There'll be a lot more money flying around, which is great, but sometimes it sucks. So our job is to try to send the signal through the noise and try to get as few people in the same pattern of foolish mistakes, of bad decisions, of over-leveraging, of centralized custodians that just get their asses handed to them, because it's all going to happen again. It's all going to happen again. And I don't really think there's any way around it. Every single time we open up into a new space of people who don't understand, quote-unquote, the rules, who come in with a fiat mindset, and I don't mean that in some, like, insult way, I just mean it, like, literally, that's what you do. When you come from fiat world, you come with a fiat mindset. You come with fiat behaviors and fiat finance decisions, and you think they're going to apply to Bitcoin in the same way, and they don't. They hurt. So send them the Bitcoin Basics episodes. I'll have that playlist in the show notes. Send them this episode if you have someone who's skeptical and you think this might tip them over the edge. So with that, I love you all. Thank you so much for supporting this show and for listening. Thank you to CoinKite and Swan Bitcoin for making this show possible. And I will catch you all on the next episode of Bitcoin Audible. And until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. Sometimes the questions are complicated and the answers are simple. Dr. Seuss.